Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a very special show tonight. My guest is one of the guitarists I've listened to for many years, and he's the epitome of tone, known as Mr. Telecaster, as his nickname is on Wikipedia. He actually started out as a piano player, starting at seven, and picked up guitar later. His dad was a piano player, so he learned from his dad. And in 2002, won a Grammy for on the Earl Scruggs album, Earl Scruggs and Friends, doing Foggy Mountain Breakdown. But he's played with many different people. You probably have heard him with Emmylou Harris and the Hot Band, Eric Clapton. He was the music director for a reunion of the Everly Brothers and played with them for a lot, and Bill Wyman's Rhythm Kings. Even more as a session player, John Prine, Roseanne Cash, John Lord, Earl Scruggs, Ricky Skaggs, the Crickets, Joe Cocker, Nicolette Larson, Dolly Parton, John Five. I mean, he's done it, and he was in the band Heads, Hands, and Feet. It's truly an honor to have Albert Lee on the show. Albert, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, what I'm going to do is I pulled a bunch of clips from his various albums, because everybody, at least all my guitar friends, when I told them I was having him on the show, he's like, he's the guy, you got to ask him about that Tele sound. He has that Tele sound. Now, I know he has a new guitar, and we're going to talk about his signature guitar later on in the show. But yes, he was the guy that had that sound that everybody was trying to get. So I'm going to play for the open. I just want to play this clip. This was a song that he, if I'm correct, you wrote. It was going to be on a solo album, but it was shelved for a little while. And you went to work with Emmylou Harris and the Hot Band. This was in the liner notes. And basically what happened was the group loved it, and it was like a showpiece for the band. And if I'm correct, then it brought attention to it, and then you ended up playing.
We cut it again, yeah.
So, and you'll see why. It's really obvious when you hear this tune. This is called Country Boy, and check this out. This pretty much defines it.
Thank you.
That is just great. That's just fantastic. Now I know you're using a Tele, right? On that,
I'm using a Tele, but most importantly, I'm using an Echoplex.
Oh, okay. Well, no, that. But still, you're doing a lot of fast picking. But it sounded like on some of it you were using your fingers, because you're known for that hybrid, what they call the hybrid style, where you use the pick and your fingers at the same time.
Yeah.
Were you doing that? Because it sounded like there was some like chords coming, like blah, 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 blah. You do a kind of a thing where you pluck the chord and pick, and pluck the chord and pick real fast.
Yeah. Well, I'm using a delay on that ending there, and so a lot of the things I'm doing are playing very strict 4-to-the-bar notes, and there are parts where I'm doing like double stops as well, but still, you know, a strict 4-to-the-bar, and they come out, you know, a lot more complicated than they are.
Now, you grew up in England, and we were talking a little bit before the show. I was asking you because you were really into the whole country playing, and at the time, from what I heard, there wasn't a lot of music available. Though later on, you said Buck Owens was pretty available. But what else was out there that you could hear that got you into that type of playing?
Well, it started with the Rockers. Really, it started with Scotty Moore, with Elvis, Cliff Gallup, with Gene Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I learned from Buddy Holly and. A lot of stuff that Hank Garland did, and a lot of the Rockers, and I didn't realize it was he that was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned from all of those guys.
Because I mean that sound was pretty distinctive. A lot of the guys, it seemed at that time in England, a lot of your contemporaries were trying to follow the blues players, and they were going after that. But I mean that style of playing was kind of unique at the time. I didn't think there was too many people that could play like that in England.
No, we all started off listening to the same stuff in the 50s, you know, and then when I began to collect country records, that's when Eric and guys like him were discovering B.B. King and Freddie King, etc. And you know, we get a slight parting in the ways in style, But I did, for a while, I did feel like I was odd man out there, you know, because I was looking for something that wasn't going on in England. And it was certainly confirmed when I met up with the Everly Brothers and their guitar player, Don Peake, in 1962 in London. And he told me about Glen Campbell and Howard Roberts, and he really liked my playing, and he said, "Oh, you do great in the States. You should come to LA." You
know?
I said, "Well, there's so many great guitar players there." He said, "Oh no, you'd fit right in, you know." And from that moment on, that's what all I wanted to do. I wanted to be here. Right in England.
No, it's interesting that they mentioned, because Glen Campbell he was one of the original Wrecking Crew, and he became pretty much an L.A. session guy at that time. I mean, eventually he was more known in Nashville later when he was a solo artist, but at that time he was an L.A. guitar player, and the guys that he's mentioning that you're talking about were like the session guys here in L.A., which was interesting.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what's even more interesting, too, is a lot of those guys like Howard Robish and stuff were really jazzers, but they could play anything. And it was an amazing time, because these guys pretty much defined, the Wrecking Crew especially, pretty much defined a major direction in rock music. The sound of the guitars, they adopted the electric guitar, which made it part of the rock legacy. And it led to everything else that happened later in the 70s, and which you were a big part of, because you were playing with all these different groups. By that time, you were touring with various people, and your sound was pretty, you know, you had a pretty distinctive sound, and it was in demand. So I want to play another clip, same album, Hiding, from 1979. And this one shows your finger-picking style. And I want to ask you a little bit. I don't know... It mentioned, and you had mentioned too, on your tellies, you had B-benders on there. And I wanted to ask you if this had B-bender. I couldn't tell because you're bending a lot on this one. It's a little different. It's not as fast, but you're doing some really cool things in here. So this one's called Now and Then It's Gonna Rain. And check this out. I mean, this is a good size clip, but you got to hear what he's doing. He's doing a lot of little cool little phrases and riffs in there that are just really beautiful. But take a listen, and then we'll discuss how you played that. Now, you can, it's obvious you're using the finger style, but some of those bends, are those bends or are you using the bender?
That's the B bender. That was my first B bender guitar. Yeah.
And that, you had, now you hit, you put that, that was on the Tele. Have you ever used that on any other guitar or is that just the Telecaster?
Just the Tele. Yeah, I've got, well, no, I have three of these Music Mans with B benders.
With B benders on?
And that was because Sterling didn't like me playing the Tele. You know? He said, "Oh, I've got to build you a pull string for your Albert Lee model," and so I've ended up with two or three of them.
Now, on that song, you were using that was your Telecaster, right?
It was. Yeah.
And then, what amp were you using? Because that tone is a nice tone. I presume that was the neck pickup, or were you using both?
I was using, let's see what guitar.
Because it has a deep sound. It's not as twangy.
Yeah, I think I was using my first Tele. I'm sure that had three pickups. Or did it? No, I think it was a two pickup.
Two pickup?
Yeah. Humbucker in the neck position.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, so it had a humbucker.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I did that. On my first Tele in the 60s, I put a humbucker on in about 1965, and I hadn't seen anybody do that at that time. And in fact, I was on a tour with Mike Bloomfield, and he saw it. So, oh, what a cool idea! I've never seen that before. So I may have been one of the first, but very fine. Session player who was in the Tonight Show band. I can't remember his name now, I'm afraid.
Well, there was, I'm trying to remember what era. There was like three different ones.
Yeah. But he played on Peter Gunn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he put a humbucker into his old Tele.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably did it before I did, but now it's, you know, it's very common to have a humbucker in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the did you have any problems? Because wasn't the I know this was an issue with the Strats, like when Van Halen put his humbucker in the Strat, or a lot of the rock guys, because the spacing of the strings was different. Did you have any issues with that, or did you just let it lay, even though they weren't in, did they align okay, or was that a problem?
As I remember, they did. Yeah, what, they weren't far off anyway.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't it, but it because that was an, I remember that was a big issue. Now they make, you know, fender spaced humbuckers, and it's not a big deal. But but that's interesting. That was back in the 60s, right? So early 60s, you were doing that.
Yeah. Well, what I did, I was messing around with my neck pickup on the telly and broke the winding.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back in England then, you couldn't go and buy new pickups. You know,
right.
No one sold pickups.
No. And there wasn't, it's not like today where, like, you know, everybody, you can get anything from Seymour Duncan to DiMarzio, whatever.
Yeah, for a short while, I had an SG Custom with three pickups.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the middle pickup off of that and put it on my telly.
That's a, and if that was an early 60s one, that was probably a patent applied for, which was one of the golden tone ones.
Yeah.
Those were little less output, but a lot more tone. So, but that's interesting. No, the now that style, the finger picking style. What was your influence on that? What were the guitarists that you heard that played, or was that your own development? Did you just kind of develop it on your own?
Well, with the B Bender, you know, I was certainly influenced by steel guitar players that mm-hmm. I heard, but of course they were playing, they weren't playing rock and roll, they were playing country, but I always thought it would be a great instrument for, mm-hmm. for playing rock and roll. And of course later on with Sneaky Pete and guys like him, it became much more common, you know, in the late 60s.
Yeah, I remember Sneaky Pete
with country rock.
I think it was Sneaky Pete, somebody had told me, he modified a little Princeton reverb, what he used to take for clubs. And it had a little 12 in it, but it had basically the guts of a bassman. So it was like 60 watts RMS, but there was like this little mini amp, and he would come in with this little tiny amp, and he was like cutting through everybody. It was and people tried to get that amp. It was like in demand. They wanted him to make more of them, but I remember hearing about that. But let me play. I'm going to play something from a later album, one of my favorite albums, Speechless. And a couple of my friends had called me and mentioned that you got to mention about Speechless because it is a great album. It was one of the ones you made for, I think, MCA at the time.
That's right.
But this is just another great song. I mean, you're just wailing on this, and it's one of my favorites. So I'm going to play this clip. It's called T-Bird to Vegas, and I pulled together, I edited it. There's more to the song. There's other solos. There's a keyboard solo and stuff, but I pulled the guitar licks in there so you can hear that. So it's a little abbreviated all guitar thing, but take a listen to this. It's really good. Now, that I love that opening. That's chords.
No, that's with the Echoplex.
That's the Echoplex. So, yeah. Because it's just it's a great, great sound. It's a great. Now, you're using, that's a Tele again, right?
Yes, that was a Tele.
And that's the bridge pickup? Because that's got a nice, that's probably one of the best examples of that, like, that Fender twang to it.
That's probably a later Tele with a middle pickup.
Oh, okay. So that would have been the middle pickup.
Yeah.
Okay.
The bridge and the middle.
So you use both together.
I use both together. I do that a lot.
It's interesting because you're not getting with the two pickups. You're not really getting that out of phase sound that you would hear like on a Strat. It doesn't sound like that. It's just got a nice. It's got. I don't know how to describe it. It's got a lot of rich overtones, but it's basically a. It's got like it's twangy, but it's got a lot of character to the timbre of it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it. You know, you got the punch and the twang of the back pickup, but the middle adds a little bass to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously it depends how you have them balanced too.
But that sound is just. I mean, the ringing of it. It's just. I don't know how to describe it. But again, as a player, it's like one of the sounds. It's like the coolest sound. What amp were you using for that? Do you remember?
Good question. Probably Music Man.
You'd had at that time. This was 1987. Music Man.
Yeah, it would have been a Music Man. Probably a 112 RP or a 410. 130 watt.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it was a, that sound is just that. Again, that album is just a great one. Now I'm going to play another clip, and this is totally different. And it reminded me a lot of a couple of years back. Jeff Beck came out with Live at Ronnie Scott's, and a lot of guys now are using their fingers. He uses all fingers. He doesn't use a pick anymore. And he's controlling the guitar. Now, he's playing with a lot more gain, and he's using the Marshalls and stuff. Mm-hmm. But he's controlling by the volume control, and he's getting this real expressive sound, but it's not really dirty. It's kind of, he'll crank it when he needs sustain, but he's basically, and it's interesting because that was like a couple of years ago. This is in 1987, and I'm wondering if you were an influence to that, because I've never heard anybody play this type of style at that time. I'm trying to remember. And it's a beautiful piece. And you said, we'll take a listen to it, because you were saying at that time, because I was curious of the guitar, and you said this might be the Les Paul Custom that Eric Clapton gave you.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
Okay, let me go ahead and play this clip. It's a beautiful ballad. It's called Romany Rye, and it's, again, what you're hearing here is, and it's a everything is just 100% taste. I don't know how to just, it's hard to, you know, I know I sound like I'm just kind of gushing or whatever, but it's rare to hear just like, you know, riff after riff. It's just like, this is really, wow, that's even cooler. And you just keep going on. And it's really laid out really well. Great arrangement. But you're just doing some of the coolest things on it. And I just want to mention that. So here's Romany Rye. Take a listen. beautiful, just 100% taste. Now, I know you're using a pick in some of that, but it sounds like what I'm trying to point out there, and for everybody that's listening, is that he gets this like really mellow sound. He does some slides and pull offs where he's. I mean, first of all, the sustain is amazing. That guitar just. You can hold the note and go outside, come back, and it's still there.
Yeah,
it's just it's amazing. And that's a Les Paul, because it's an interesting tone. It's a unique.
Well, what makes it interesting compared with other Les Pauls is it's a custom, and I'm using the bridge and the middle pickup together.
Oh, it's a three pickup custom. Okay,
yes.
And it's the bridge and middle pickup.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was the strange thing about those guitars. I had one previous to that where the middle pickup was out of phase. So when you switched to that two pickup set, it was really bright and thin.
Yeah, real bright and thin.
But on Eris guitar, it had been reversed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'd forget. I haven't heard some of these tracks for a long time.
So, yeah, he's like listening, like, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I might dig that guitar out.
Yeah, what I really noticed too is that when you dug into the guitar, it got this. It got a little bit of grit to it. There's a little bit of. I don't know if that's the pickup distorting or if that's the amp. But I presume you're using the Music Man, right?
Yeah, I've totally used
it. But it was interesting because it's totally, again, it's that what I'm saying is that expressiveness that you do. When you dig in, it gets a little bit of a bloom to it. But when you lay back, it still has that mellow sound. And even either one, it still sustains forever. I presume that's just the guitar. If you weren't using any compression or anything to get the sustain.
Well, maybe on the board in the studio,
but I mean, even then, you can tell because you're like you'll slide up on a note after you pick it, and you slide up, and it's still going, and you'll come back down, or you do a turnaround or something like that, and it's just, I mean, that it reminded me a lot of what I think it was Dan Alife that Beck had done. He was doing similar type of things. Now you're using some pick in there. I heard some pick in fingers.
Oh yeah,
but he's using. His fingers, but I mean, it's that same type of thing where you get that control, because you do, like, even on that other song, T-Bird to Vegas, where you're doing those little chord things, they're really cool, and that sound of the fingers, the even though you have nails, the flesh, it's a little different sound. It's a more round tone, whereas when you're hitting it with the pick, you know what I mean, it's you get a really beautiful sound out of that, and it in the way you phrase, you'll go back and forth between it. It makes the line more expressive, I think.
Yeah. Well, when I'm playing finger style, like the banjo type rolls, I'll use the fleshy part of the fingers. But you know, for the more staccato things, I'll use the nails. I don't get it. Don't keep them very long.
Is it? Can you demonstrate that a little bit? Let's.
Let me see. So I'm using the pick and the fleshy part of the fingers, but if I want to use more of a staccato thing, I'll use the nails, you know. I guess I learned that from Jerry Reed.
Jerry Reed.
But I couldn't get on with a thumb pick, so I
right. Well, you're using the pick like a. It's very similar. The way your hand is positioned, it's like the thumb pick with the.
It is really, I guess, yeah.
With the three fingers on the picking from the back. But it gives you that whole difference in terms of tone. It does give you a lot just that without changing the pickups. And some of that with the flesh, you get almost like a jazzier tone, like that rich, deep sound, which is pretty, it's a beautiful sound.
Yeah, I prefer to do it that way. You know, like James Burton will play, he'll have a flat pick and a finger pick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never really tried that. You know, I've been doing this since the early 60s, really.
Right. Well, you get pretty fast, though. I mean, you're wailing away on Country Boy. That thing really hauls. I mean, you're really, and even the T-Bird to Vegas, you're getting pretty fast, and you're doing both. That thing's just like, yeah, that's pretty quick, you know. But it's interesting. Can you? I'm trying to think. How do you have your guitar set up to get that type of sustain? Was there anything special with the Les Paul, or is there anything special with this guitar, the Music Man? Too, because you get a lot of sustain. I mean, were the tellies always like that? Were they just good tellies, or did you ever have problems?
I just have the amp fairly loud. Mm-hmm. Not to the point of distortion, but just so that I get a bit of a punch with it without it distorting. And, I set the, usually set the treble at around 2 o'clock, I guess, and the middle and the bass set at 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're using a preamp. We should mention that, too. That's part of your sound.
Yeah.
That's a Korg?
It's an ancient Korg A3 multi-effects unit.
And, okay.
They gave me one when they first first came out. And that became my sound. And over the years, people have given them to me. You know, I've done interviews and mentioned it. You know, and they said, "Oh, yeah, you're still using your A3?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I still use it." And, "Well, I bought one because of you." And a guy in Norway bought two of them. He said, "I've got two of them." He said, "Yeah, you're welcome to have one if you like." And I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "Yeah." And he ran home and brought it around. So I've got about five or six of them now.
Oh, okay. No, but when did you start using them? Were you using them at the time you did Speechless?
No.
It went, okay.
No, it was after, I'm sure it was after that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So it gives you a lot of, I mean, now you... What are you using now in terms of amplifier? You were using Music Man before, so what are you using now?
I still like the Music Man. So I used to use the 130 head with big open back cabinets with the 212. And mm-hmm. I got that idea from Eric, because when I played with Eric in the early 80s, he was using the same setup.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's a great idea. It's like a twin amp, but the box is a lot bigger.
You know? Oh, okay.
So I do that with all my amps now. I've got Fender Tone Masters,
mm-hmm.
and I've cut ports in the back of it, you know, to let some air out.
Let the air
out.
You know? It's like an open back. Yeah, okay. So you use both. You'll mix it up with the Music Man or the Fender.
Yeah, well, mostly lately it's the Tone Master, you know, as good as the Music Mans are. My old ones, they're really ancient. I've got them all in the 70s.
Right, they don't make your model anymore.
Well, they do. They do make. They're having them made in Italy by Mark Bass, and they're very good. I've tried a couple of them. Mm-hmm. They're really good. I haven't gotten around to getting one yet, but they're excellent reproductions of the original amps,
and they're pretty transparent. Now the reason I'm asking that is because the front end of a Music Man is solid state with a tube power stage. That's and right. the one that Fender you're talking about is all tube. Is it pretty much the same? Not a much difference for you?
No, it is a slightly different sound, and the Fender has a I don't know I can't remember what the switch is called now, but it gives it a little more punch. There's a setting on the amp where it gives it a little more punch and fattens the sound up without distorting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I use that all the time.
And it gives you, because you tend to go for a real full sound, even though you'll play bright in certain places, but you do get it. You get deep when you need to, which is...
Yeah, well, I've always been a big Duane Eddy fan, so I like to... I love to hear those bottom strings twang. You know?
Now, what... strings are you using on there to get that sound? Because that has a lot of overtones.
Yeah, well, these are this is regular Slinky, Ernie Ball regular Slinky, except I'm using a, instead of a 17, I'm using a 15.
Oh, okay. So instead of a 15, because it gets that, and it's just the standard Slinky, because it's just a really bright sound.
Yeah.
What were you using before? Were you using Ernie Ball back then?
Not in the. It took me a while to get into Ernie Ball. It's only after I met Sterling and the family that I started to use them. You know, but when we started playing rock and roll in England, we'd hear all these great records. You know, with the guys bending the strings, and I thought, I can't do that on my guitar. You know. And then we found out that the guys were had unwound third strings. You know, this is like 1960, and it was guys, Americans who were over in England at that time, like Eddie Cochran, kind of spread the word what guys over here were doing. You know, they were going into music stores and making up sets of strings, and what we did to begin with was buy a set of strings plus an extra first string. So we put a first string on, then a first string on the second, and a second string on the third, and so on, and throw away the most expensive string.
Yeah.
And that way we'd have a rock and roll set of strings. You know?
Now, back then, what was available in England? Were you, could you get Fender strings? Could you? I mean,
Yeah, you could.
In the 60s, there wasn't a lot of string makers.
Yeah, no, you could get actually, way back, you could get Black Diamond in the late 50s.
They sound good? Did you like those?
Yeah. Well, I tried.
I knew
them
more as acoustic guitar strings.
Yeah, I tried them once or twice, but when I got my first Les Paul in '61, I bought Sonomatics. You know, they were importing the strings as well, and I'd make up a set of strings. You know, from the box, and then by '65, I think when Fender rock and roll strings came out,
right,
which was like a 10 to a 38. That was,
well, actually, that was
heaven. You
the 150Ls, which were the, they call them the rock and roll lights, was originally the string set designed for the Tele in the early days with the plain wound string, the G string, which Leo gave to the country players, the country pickers, as I understand it, because that's one of the brightest sounding strings. I've never heard a set sound that bright. I mean, I could pull harmonics off of it. And that string set, the Fender 150Ls are still to die for. I mean, they still get, you put that on a Strat or a, it just has all sorts of tone to it. But the Gibsons were darker for me. I mean, most of them. And I tried some of the, we were, you know, out here, we were not that far from Rickenbacker, and Rickenbacker strings were available too, and they were pretty twangy. They had a good, their round wounds were pretty bright too. We found those, but it's interesting. But then, when did you guys never use Rotosounds? Because that was it might have been cheaper. And
yeah, I wasn't into English strings. No.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay. So you were basically, well, no, that's important because that's a lot of the sound.
Oh, yeah.
But
no.
It was pretty, in the 60s then, you could get Fender strings and Gibson strings pretty easily.
It was Gibson and Fender I was using. And I didn't really try Ernie Ball strings, although they were available in mid-60s onwards. I never really did try Ernie Ball until I came to the States and met Sterling and Ernie. And I realized, you know, that the strings were slightly different. They were round wound. And the Fender strings I was using in the 60s were like a half round, you know?
Well, the Fenders, the 150s were round, but I remember the Gibson Sonomatics, a lot of them, like on when I got my Les Paul, it was a flat wound string. It wasn't even close, you know? So as soon as that string set wore out, then I changed it and went to round ones, and then you got the overtones.
Of course, yeah.
But, no, it was interesting. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the guitars and your new guitar, but one of my friends just texted me, and he wanted me to ask you, he's a big fan of yours, and he wanted to know if you knew Big Jim Sullivan.
I did, yeah. I knew him from 1960, I first met him. I did my first tour in 1960.
Oh, okay.
And he was working with a guy called Marty Wild, who was a big English rocker at the time.
Marty.
And I think he I'm pretty sure he must have backed Eddie Cochran on the tour that I saw. You know, I actually met Eddie for about 5 minutes. He borrowed our amplifier from the agent. You know.
Oh, okay. thank you for answering that. Yeah. What I want to ask you now is, what made you decide to get a signature, to make your own guitar? And what did you want in the guitar? What was lacking, if there was anything lacking in the Tele that you got in the guitar? Because obviously there were specific things you wanted. I know that's a loaded question, but how did it come about that you built this guitar and what was the thought behind it?
Well, I actually adopted it.
Oh, okay.
I was certainly happy with my Teles. Mm-hmm. Played them for all those years, and Leo made when he started Music Man, he made guitars and the basses, of course, and I didn't really like the Music Man guitars that were made at that time, and then they had a parting of the ways. Leo went off and started GNL, and Tom Walker, who made the amps, carried on for a little while on his own, and then he sold the company to Ernie Ball, and then Ernie and Sterling decided that they wanted to start from scratch and design a guitar. So the first guitar that they came out with was the Silhouette, and you know, we were all hanging around together, and we were kicking our 2 cents with what we'd like in a guitar. And one of my favorite Silhouettes from that time is that, I think I told you, it's got 2 single coils, you know, bridge and middle, but the back pickup is a Tele pickup, you know, and I still love that guitar. But shortly after they did the Silhouette, they did a guitar that looked just like this, and they showed it at NAMM, and I thought, well, I like that. It's kind of wacky looking, you know, and didn't think any more of it until I did a gig with Sterling maybe a year later. He said, I've had a guitar made. What you see it, it's fantastic, you know. And it was all maple and looked very much like this, but without the tremolo.
Right.
And he said, wait till you see it. You'll want it, you know.
Yeah, so that has a maple top. That's a plain maple.
Yeah, but the original one was all maple. You know?
It was all maple.
But these are the Ball Family Reserve, which has a really nice...
That's a maple top with swamp ash, right? That's a swamp ash, because that's important. That's what your Tele was a swamp ash, and that figured maple neck is just beautiful.
Oh yeah, they're great. They had a great.
And it's not a real glossy finish. It looks on the fretboard. It's kind of a.
Oh no! Well, that's one thing I really like about the Music Man guitars. They're all they've got gun oil finish. They're not lacquered, and just so comfortable, and they don't get sticky. And they're so comfortable to play.
Now, did you want something specific in the pickups, or did you just like what he had, or did you give him?
To be honest, I'd been using. Seymour had been a long time friend, and whenever I needed a guitar for one of the Teles or whatever, he'd send me a pickup. You know, very generous guy. So I wanted to return the favor when Sterling. At long last decided to put my guitar out on the market. I said, well, I'd really like to use Seymour's pickups, you know. And so they're Alnico magnets. And the bridge pickup has a metal plate, a little bit like a Tele pickup. Not quite as heavy, but, you know, it gives it a certain snap, I think. And these have tone blocks in them too. And I always forget what it is. I don't know if it's mahogany or... anyway, there is a heavier wood set in here, in the main part of the body, and it gives it... it seems to focus the sound a bit more, you know. But I can't say that I prefer this over the standard model of my guitar, because I think they're both... unique in their own ways.
The standard model doesn't have the maple top, right?
No.
But I think the electronics and everything else is identical.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's the same. Yeah.
And that tremolo is an interesting. It's a tool. It's really smooth. I mean, it's a variation of the fulcrum type of, like, the Strat type.
Yeah, and I love it, and it's the guitar. Just never goes out of tune by
now. Now, the nut on there has some. I'm going to take a picture of that. There's something. How is that?
Oh well, this is a newer thing of theirs. It's like a graduated nut.
Okay, and that.
You know, to help with the tuning down here. You know.
Because it's interesting because is it a self-lubricating type of nut? So because you're bending a lot.
No, it isn't.
And you have locking tuners, right?
Yeah. And I never thought I'd like those until I started to use them, and the guitar stayed in tune a lot better than.
But even with the going through the nut and rubbing through the nut when you use the tremolo. The locking tuners make it more stable than a standard tuner. You notice the difference?
Yeah, but I've always, with all my guitars, I put a little bit of graphite in there, you know, to ease it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I noticed that it sounds really smooth. The tremolo action is really, really.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Just one thing that I do to these guitars when I get them. The tremolo is usually sticking up in the air a little more. What I do, I put it in a vise so that it's more almost flush to the top of the top of the guitar, and I slacken off the springs in the back just a little bit so that it does float.
Well, I noticed that you have let me have you lift it like that. I want to get it out. I'm taking a picture of this. I'm going to post so you can see the angle of the tremolo and the angle of the bar. What I wanted to ask you, though, is I noticed that your tremolo is flat to the body.
Pretty much.
I always learned from Fender. I met a guy that used to work at Fender. The way you set the Fender Strat bridges is like about a quarter inch, so it's like a little angle to get it so it floats like that. I'm curious. Have you ever tried that with a little bit, just a little up? So it's just like a quarter inch up from the, like a.
Oh no! That's how the. Oh.
That's how the. So you could go. Well, you don't go back. You don't bend back, right?
No.
So I guess that would be why.
No, but just to get it, I like a true vibrato.
Mm-hmm. Where you go up and down.
Yeah, just to shake it a little bit. You know,
but
I do a few dive bombs here and there.
Yeah, it's a real smooth tremolo.
Yeah, they're really good.
And the bridge looks like it's just machine metal, which that might not sound like it's fancy or not, but it has the tone. There's a difference between the a stainless steel bridge and a bridge like that.
Yeah.
And part of that Fender sound was that metal that they used for that bridge.
Yeah. No, I think it's very much like a Fender, but they've really improved upon it.
Mm-hmm. And then you also have we're almost out of time, but you also have a silent circuit. So there's a circuit in the guitar that basically works as a noise canceller?
Yeah, and they do that with all their guitars, and I think it really helps, especially with the single coils.
I'm taking pictures of this while we're talking. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's just the battery.
But he also has a 5-bolt neck, which allow. With the 5-bolt, it doesn't move.
No.
Which was a big problem with the 4-bolts, and even worse with the 3-bolt Fenders, where they would if you pulled something, it would move the neck.
Oh yeah. Well, I've had that with some of my old tellies, especially with the B-benders, because you're pulling on the neck all the time.
Right, right.
And it would go offline sometimes, and you'd have to yank it back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I know that they make another model, too, with humbuckers on there. Do you have a mix and match? Do you have one with a humbucker and the two, the single coils?
Yeah, they always get, if any innovations, they'll give
you. So you have all the variations of it.
And, the humbucker. Well, they usually ask me first. You'd say, well, we're going to put humbuckers on one of your models, and what do you think? I said, well, great idea, because I knew that there would be a lot of kids who would really, really.
Well,
love,
yeah, and
love
then
that
also
sound.
You were one of the first guys that put a humbucker on his telly. That that definitely changed the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I started seeing it later in the 70s, where a lot of guys were playing those, but I didn't hear about it in the 60s. So that was pretty innovative.
And I have, you know, I have the models with P90s on too, which I love.
Wow.
They do
P90
well. Well, they're cutting back a bit now because they make so many guitars now, and so they've had to sort of refine the line a little bit, you know. So I think I've got like two or three models now.
Unusual, one of a kind type.
Yeah.
Well, these guitars are ready. The three pickup one that we have here, and the dual humbucker I've seen at every outlet. You can get it at every store. And playing them, they're pretty consistent from what I've heard. And I tried them at NAMM, and they played nice. But I mean, they from what you've played the different ones, and they're very consistent. Ball's always been quality stuff.
Oh yeah, you just I go and do clinics around the world and around the country.
Yeah,
and sometimes I don't take a guitar and I just use one that they have there.
Oh wow!
I just tweak it a little bit,
and it's ready to go.
Yeah, and they're great.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show. It's really a pleasure to have you on, Lori. There's some dates that he's playing locally. And could you go ahead and mention those? And then also, too, his latest album is The Highwayman, which you're doing, and it's an acoustic album. We were talking about electrics today, but it's an acoustic album.
It's more of an unplugged record. I'm playing piano in it, too.
But he's playing at McCabe's, right?
Yes, McCabe's is coming.
Hold on. There we go.
Hi. McCabe's is coming up this weekend, which is May 7th. And May 8th. I think Saturday might already be sold out, but Sunday tickets are still available. And Jerry Donahue will be opening both shows, and Albert will be there with his band. And I just want to give a shout out to Lincoln Meyerson for just having such a great program at McCabe's all the time. We just love the shows over there, and that's my hood. That's my neighborhood. So I just love having McCabe's there. I was there yesterday, actually. and then the following weekend at the Eclectic Music Fest and Art Walk in South Pasadena, Albert will be playing at some point between 3 and 10 p.m. Do you know your time? So sometime between 3 and 10, but there seems to be a lot going on there between Art Walk and all the music festivities, and it is a free event. And he'll be touring. He'll be leaving after that and touring around. And his schedule is on his website, which is albertlee.co.uk. So you can always check that. He just played the Malibu Guitar Fest this past weekend, and he's been busy. So we are very blessed to have him in town a lot since he lives here. And it's my honor, and I'm so happy to have you here at the station.
I can't thank you enough. It's a real honor to have you on the show. And what else is coming up? There was another event that that we mentioned last week.
The Benefit?
The Benefit.
Well, yes, I guess I could plug The Benefit once again. Albert was actually part of our last one that we did with the same group of people. It was our Christmas rock and roll Christmas show. He'll be on tour during the next one, which is June 24th and June 25th. We're doing two shows this time at the El Rey. And the theme for this one is the California Saga, which will be a tribute to the California sound. We're going to have some great stars with us on this one, too. Freebo and Rosemary Butler and Danny Korchmar will be with us. And Steve Postel, once again, will join us. Skunk Baxter and more to come. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Okay, well, listen, we're out of time. Thank you again so much, and I'm going to leave. I'm going to leave us with another version of Country Boy that was done in 2013, and this is with the Music Man, the Albert Lee model, and you're using the Tone Masters, right? If I'm correct, at the Iridium.
No, I'm not. I'm using a twin.
You're using a twin.
The house twin.
So this is Country Boy. This is the another version of it, but you can hear the Music Man. It's a beautiful sound. So thank you so much. I really appreciate
pleasure.
It. And thank you, Lori. We'll see you guys next week. Have a great week. Here's Country Boy.